I'm Chris from Nerd Alert News, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Check out all the other great podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, dudes and dudettes, you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. I'm Noel Clark. Don't you ever, ever, ever touch that dial.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Episode 182 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we find ourselves fascinated by the organization formed to protect the citizens of this modest planet from threats beyond our skies, beyond our scientific and military defensive capabilities, and in some instances, beyond our very ability to comprehend. When the situation is most dire, when the world is in the greatest need, we call upon the Avengers!
Mm-mm.
Oh, wait.
No.
What podcast is this?
No, it's not that one. It's the other one.
It's not the
other one. Yeah, I'm pretty, pretty sure.
The other one.
Oh.
Yeah.
I am the host of many podcasts, Haley Malley. And with me today, we have the host of this podcast, Jay Witten. How are you today, Jay?
I'm doing okay.
And the host of this podcast and some others, Keir Hansen. How are you today, Keir?
I can't wait to talk about Rogue One. Let's go.
Let's get to the After Dark segment. What's yay.
Wait a second. What? Okay. This week we look at the other assembled team who has been chosen to put their efforts and strive to protect us feeble humans from the dangers not of this Earth. But even labeling that team within the Doctor Who universe, that could refer to two such organizations. So tonight we're going to do a little bit of a compare and contrast between the United Nations Intelligence Task Force, or UNIT, and the covert extraterrestrial operations team known as Torchwood. So, you would think on the surface they have quite a bit in common, but you know, if you take them apart, there's actually some pretty notable differences in their function, in their organization, and in their strength. So, figure that'd be one of the things we talk about tonight. Thought it was interesting. Where do you want to dive in?
Well, I mean, let's go into the overall scope of these, because they are, while remarkably similar, there is some difference between them. I mean, so Torchwood was founded by Queen Victoria in the episode Tooth and Claw, right? And it was specifically designed to protect the Earth against basically the Doctor. And then
to be specific, protect England.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
She was really just concerned about protecting her monarchy. Realm, yeah.
Okay, so protect England from just the Doctor at the beginning, and then it kind of branches out over time to include all alien threats. Mm-hmm. Whereas UNIT, okay, Keir, you know better UNIT better than I do.
If you want to include some of the things that were brought up in the novels, because they actually, if you wanted to trace it back beyond what was televised, the televised origin story takes it back to obviously just kind of a British military presence back in the late 60s, early 70s. You've got the episodes of the invasion where after a result of defeating the Cybermen, the Second Doctor makes it very clear to Lethbridge Stewart, not yet in his rank capacity as the Brigadier, that there are forces that are beyond the scope of what standard military response can handle and military intelligence. So that's as far as the televised aspect of it, that's their origins. If you take some of the novels, they say that there was a predecessor. The League of Nations, obviously, is a predecessor to the United Nations, put together a group called Longbow. I don't remember if that was an acronym. God, I hope it wasn't, because that's long. But they were actually positioned to use unusual methods to actually prevent the development of World War II. When that failed, Longbow was eventually disbanded, but some of that presence, that idea of dealing with things that were beyond conventional military scope, became the origin points for UNIT. We know it, obviously, from the televised points where, you know, obviously, if you deal with a Cyberman invasion, when the dust settles and it all clears, you realize, well, that was a little bit more than, you know, what we'd been accustomed to during, you know, a late 60s. You're at a relatively peaceful period, mm-hmm. relatively, at least as far as the United Kingdom. And I know when we got a chance at Elihu 3, when we were interviewing the writer and producer Derek Sherwin, he was explaining that he came up with the idea of UNIT to bring it in as a means so that as the Doctor was dealing with these major alien threats and things, it would just be kind of not only taxing on the actor, but taxing on the audience a bit to say, well, okay, this massive invasion force comes in and this one individual is fending them off entirely. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to have some sort of a connection to a military or an enforcement presence. And he also wanted to have a bit of a connection for the audience to look at things. You know, you're getting towards the late 60s and early 70s and so, and some of the presence of things like what was going on, the origins of, post-Korean War and early days of the Vietnam conflict, that these were sort of reality-based issues that were all around them. And to have that kind of a connection within a science fiction program would be a touchstone for the audience too. So from a practical side, it was really there to be Doctor Who's army,
yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah, no, I mean that kind of makes sense. But so, I mean, you've got Torchwood, which is, you know, the, you know, here defend England against the aliens, and then UNIT, which is a specialized military group, so you mm-hmm. know, akin to the Navy SEALs and you know, something like that, with just a very narrow mission statement, basically.
Yeah. When you see it, it's not something, it's not called a you know, a battalion or anything of that sort. It's a task force.
Right.
They have a very specific set of objectives. So, and that's why they were kept arguably separate from, you know, Her Majesty's Army or the Royal Navy or anything of that sort. They were an independent organization and they were multinational so that they could just be something that was brought in to handle things that didn't qualify as other military involvement. But
right.
And that's why I thought it'd be interesting to kind of look at the fact that their presence, you know, they developed into a sense of homeworld security, which is really relevant today, you know, as we talk about things having homeland security and things of that sort here in the States. They were that defensive, are, because they still, as far as where we are in the chronology of the program right now, they're still perfectly active, whereas Torchwood is rogues. Let's call it rogues.
AWOL. There's your...
So, all right, before we dig too much further into this, Haley, I wanted your viewpoint on this. So as someone who's primarily a New Whovian, what do you see the difference between the two? Are they basically interchangeable for you, or do you understand the difference between them, or how does that strike you?
I was thinking about this earlier today. I was kind of wondering why we needed two organizations. They feel like they could almost be branches of the same organization. Like, you've got UNIT, that's your more military presence, and then you've got Torchwood, which is probably a more covert scientific arm. But I don't see the need for them to be two completely distinct organizations.
Well, as we just identified their origins,
right?
You just actually hit the nail on the head by describing them as one is the highly public, is the recognizable presence. UNIT is here. Their forces arrive. They occupy. They, you know, they take stands and so forth. Torchwood being covert, they have to do a lot of the things that are more cloak and dagger. They don't even identify themselves to the local police forces. They're just, you don't need to see our IDs. That it's okay. Your higher ups have already cleared all this. So they are more the scalpel, whereas unit is more the axe handle. So keeping them separate that way keeps them from having to be, or keeping them compartmentalized like that, keeps the plausible deniability of the involvement of one or the other in anything that they had to do.
So to tie it into the reference brought up at the beginning of the show, Unit would basically be the Avengers, where Torchwood would be S.H.I.E.L.D. Because, I mean, they've got branded stuff all over the place.
Be current S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. S.H.I.E.L.D. operating without S.H.I.E.L.D. really existing.
Unit is ATKU.
Yes.
There you go. Hope you're all up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Otherwise, this conversation means nothing.
And I just, like, made a weird sneeze sound. I don't know what happened.
Okay. You should take some fish oil for that.
Do wonders for the skin.
So one thing that
I was wondering, I'm trying to remember, did they reintroduce Unit into the Modern Who before they introduced Torchwood?
No.
Yes.
Unit's
involvement in Modern Who?
Yes.
I believe, that's a really good question. I'm trying to think when.
The first time I remember seeing Unit was in, the Dead Planet at the end of Series 4. I could be wrong.
And Torchwood was Series 2, right? Yes. Beginning of Series 2. They started laying those seeds.
With the Christmas invasion.
When did Unit first emerge?
I don't think I remember seeing them.
That was Army of Ghosts. That was Unit.
Okay, yeah, you're right. But that was still after Torchwood was mentioned.
Okay.
I mean, it's in the same
series. I'm wondering if, from a production standpoint, the idea was to create a new organization to introduce the audiences to them as it's created. And this was just going to be the organization that Earth had. And then later they were like, well, let's bring Unit back.
Hmm. Right.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I did notice going back on this was Unit seems like, I mean, obviously, we see them the majority of the time when they're out of their depth. You know, the Doctor has to come in and rescue save the planet and everything like that. So they're already at wit's end, but they do function relatively well. Sure, they'll lose guys left and right when, they try and shoot Daleks with machine guns, because that's a thing. But for the most part, you can tell this is an effective military unit. Whereas Torchwood, if we take Torchwood 3, if we take the Cardiff, Jack's group out of it and just look at Torchwood from the other instances we see, they're very competent but complete mad scientists. Like, they become the problem more often than they solve it.
I am going to actually defy you all doing a little quick researching. I just recalled, because I knew that it had not been maybe as much name checked, but you had Unit actually involved or identified in Aliens of London and World War III.
Okay, yeah.
Because that was actually the first introduction of Toshiko.
Right.
And her involvement. But it was one of the few cases where you had Torchwood and Unit referenced within the same story. And that's one thing that we wanted to get to, is the fact that they don't really cross paths. You have maybe a character that traverses across the line, so to speak, but you never had both presences within an episode at the same time.
Okay.
But yeah, that was that one. I guess some of the involvement is you had the introduction of a regular character who was later going to be used in Torchwood. You had the involvement of because Harriet Jones, at that time, when she was just I forget what rank she was, what ID she was carrying in her pocket.
Wasn't she like city council or something?
Something small. Yeah. She was, the ombudsman or something. But that was
Recreation Department director.
Exactly. She was the nopes. But that was the first connection with Unit as well. Within, so that's Ninth Doctor at that point. That's pretty early on. So they kind of broke in at the same time within New Who, within that episode. Okay.
Okay.
So kudos to RTD. He actually wrote that one. So
that
was...
Well, yeah, but I think that the having Tosh in there was just, she was just a character, and it was retroactively put in that she was acting for Torchwood.
It was retconned?
Yeah. I mean, they brought it up in Torchwood when she was talking about, like, filling in for Owen.
But they, but specifically with UNIT, they were called out as being, right. why are they involved? Well, they are the experts on aliens. Then the Doctor mentions having worked with them in the past,
right.
But they wouldn't recognize him now. So,
okay,
that kind of gets me to one thing. I mean, Haley, you're asking about, you know, how, why it was really necessary to have them as separate entities, even though they were accomplishing a lot of the same tasks. In essence, they also had a lot of the same organizational structure, too. The scale was obviously a little different. You know, Torchwood was, like I said, I like to call that the scalpel. I mean, they were down to teams of anywhere from 4 to 8 between the four hubs internationally. Mm-hmm. Whereas UNIT was, God, countless numbers. I have no idea. I don't know if anyone ever attempted to try and determine the scope.
Except when Torchwood was first introduced, when it was an office building full of peons.
Mm. And it's funny, I think they gave the impression that in the distant future, when it was no longer an operational organization, then it became kind of an archival records of interplanetary and intergalactic threats and concerns. They became more a research wing. That they ended up becoming that kind of number again, but they didn't have the same sort of a function as what we would identify with the original four Torchwood hubs.
Okay.
So it kind of followed a bell curve to a certain degree in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the things that I found interesting is that the Doctor is always like, I mean, yes, he's butted heads with UNIT, but he's always known that they were there to quote unquote help. Yeah, you know, whether or not they...
Oh, sure.
But with Torchwood...
Well, he was on the payroll.
Well, yeah.
But with... He was their initial scientific advisor. I mean, after dealing with the... what was it? In the Spearhead from Space and so forth. And because they had originally brought on the very short-lived companion, Liz Shaw, to be the scientific advisor or one of the first scientific advisors, because they were learning their lesson from the Cybermen invasion and going through some of their interactions. They relied on the second Doctor for a lot of information and advice with regards to strategy and tactical deployment and such. But it was never really, all right, we are going to have research labs. We are going to have to take things apart systematically to determine how we have to defend ourselves from these particular conditions, which we have never even registered on our scope before.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then, of course, they go and they bring in scientific advisors, and then they say, well, we've got this Doctor who's kind of overqualified. So, sorry, Ms. Shaw.
Yeah, but then, I mean, you've got Torchwood, who, like we said, was specifically designed to protect England from the Doctor. So, and to the point where, he acted as the adversary, or Torchwood acted as the adversary to the Doctor multiple times, to when Jack took over Torchwood, the third hub, he had to say, no, I've done something completely different with this one. So it's like, I mean, automatically, as soon as the Doctor hears Torchwood, it's this confrontational thing instead of, hey, let's work together on this. It is a get out of my way, you're just going to make it worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't exactly get up on the right foot. Which is why the very few times the Doctor interacts with Torchwood is usually just because of Jack.
Mm.
Or at times when you would think you'd be watching Torchwood and think, why wouldn't they just call up on the Doctor at this point, and so forth. And you end up with that great moment within COE
don't bring it up.
where Gwen says one of the most poignant things that ever came up in that series, which is there are times when even when the Doctor would turn a blind eye to what we've been capable of. So, that says quite a bit about the origin stories.
Incidentally, I just had a friend go through, watch COE. And wanted to call and talk to me about it. I'm like, no, not doing it. You're on your own. Just,
you've got my sympathy, but I got to
drop that Band-Aid, but.
It's like, sorry, I just watched it. I just watched it like two years ago. I'm not time yet.
I do think it's interesting that, you know, we were talking about the fact that Torchwood and Unit don't share the screen very often, if at all. But when they do, it's usually about one character that kind of bounces back and forth, whether it's Tosh, something like that. In this particular case, one of the only really clear instances where we had that crossover was within the Torchwood series, when Martha Jones, acting as a medical advisor for Unit, comes to assist the Torchwood team on one of their cases,
mm-hmm.
which was great. I mean, that was for a lot and for a huge number of people. And we keep having this. I hear more and more people explain this as we go to conventions and talk with people. They say that they backed into Doctor Who because of Torchwood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that.
And Martha was the key.
Yeah. And I mean,
Team Martha.
But when you think about it, it makes sense, because Torchwood was meant to be the adult version of Doctor Who. It wasn't the family friendly. It was the dark and gritty. Let's tell the difficult storylines. You know, let's really make bring in the older generation. So it makes sense mm-hmm. that people would find that first and be like, well, this is a really interesting world. What else is there? And then find Doctor Who and already be invested, instead of sitting them yeah. down in front of Rose and saying, I know it sucks. I know the production is crappy. Just power
stick
through
with it for a little bit.
I swear it gets better. I can't tell you how many times I've said that phrase.
But there are families that I've introduced to it that have started from Rose. We're getting off topic, but nonetheless, who cares? This is what we do.
It's our podcast. We'll do what we want.
Who started with Rose, and all the kids and teenagers in the house watch it, and they're like, oh, okay, I get it. Sure, whatever. And the parents are going, come on, mannequins. Really? That was what you were going to do? But that's exactly why they did it.
Exactly.
One of the things that I thought was kind of a notable difference, obviously, you know, the scale has something to do with it. Maybe if Torchwood was a more largely populated organization or a larger organizational structure, this may not be as stark of a difference. But that has to do with sort of non-uniformed, and I'm using that uniform term just to mean as active field members, because even Yanto got involved from time to time. He was always packing.
Right.
You know, he made a lot of coffee, but he was a dead shot too at the same time. So, but on the Unit side, you had scores of people who never saw field operations. Mm-hmm. They were strictly number crunchers, or they were their IT techs. They were, you know, they like your active military. They're individuals who never see combat. Right. So that's probably one of the more distinct differences, is that there in Torchwood, everybody had to be kind of an Iron Man and be willing mm-hmm. to jump into
to
anything.
Because yeah. really, in a perfect world, Tosh and Owen would probably not be going out in the field.
No.
Yeah.
Keep those guys in the lab.
Owen does not have anyone's back but Owen's.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the thing, is when you have a small team like that and your mission statement is so broad, you have to be a jack of all trades. Like, everybody has to be able to handle every situation. And that's what makes them such a specialized unit, is the fact that everybody can handle everything that gets thrown at them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Unit, it's like, hey, we've got this going on. Let's go through the flow chart. Okay, send in team like, you know, D27. Those are the guys that handle this. And it's just everything is so specialized that you have a lot of bureaucracy. Whereas Torchwood, they can go in, do whatever needs to be done, because everybody, like, it's just such a small team.
Mm. Yeah, you think there were a lot of instances where Unit involved, and especially in some of the last couple instances where we saw it under Kate Stewart's control or advisement, had to deal with protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hands tied in a lot of instances in the way they would react, because they were concerned about political outcry or so forth, dealing with these incidents. And the doctor's ripping his hair out, realizing, you know, this is that you have to work quickly on this. Torchwood doesn't have those kind of restrictions. They shoot first and ask questions later, or shoot first and ask for apologies later.
Okay. So here's a question for you guys. Now, we've, like you said, we've had Unit come back under Kate Stewart and really become heavily involved in the new series, and to great effect often. Mm-hmm. If we're excluding outside or inside baseball, so not knowing what's going on with the actors and things like that, just looking from a story point, would there be room to reintroduce Torchwood? to bring that kind of element back into it. Now that we have a somewhat darker tone, now that we have an edgier Doctor, could it be, you know, could we bring Torchwood back now to get into some of those darker storylines?
Are you taking where we know Torchwood stands?
I'm saying Torchwood
in
as
their series,
Torchwood as an organization, not necessarily the Jax Hub, but just Torchwood as an organization.
You can't, because no other hub survived. One and two were destroyed. Four, I think, was the one in India, disappeared.
Okay, but
and three is on the run. But few survivors.
I mean, the decree from Queen Victoria still stands. There needs to be a Torchwood organization. So just because those active buildings or the teams or whatever are gone doesn't mean that someone can't find that and reform Torchwood with that directive again, that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, just because the physical objects are gone doesn't mean that the idea of the organization is.
Yes. Well, no. And we have proof of that if you want to take canon, because in the Satan Pit, we find that the what is now known as the Torchwood Archive is there, but they're more a matter of an informational gathering resource rather than an active arm. So that's in the 42nd century. So we know that the name persists, which means that somewhere along that way, the transition happened where it became more of a record keeping or a, you know, or something of that sort. How do they have a second wave as an enforcement arm? Yeah, I could absolutely see that. A lot of time has yet to pass. You know, 2,000 years. Yeah, I'd take that. Especially because of the fact that they were limited to four hubs in recent record through 2011. Three of them were in the UK alone. Yeah. Only one of them was
international,
India,
yeah,
of all places.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, would, and we kind of teased this last week, how interesting would it be to see a, you know, even just a fight over jurisdiction between Torchwood and UNIT?
I probably could watch a pissing match between Jack and Kate for about three quarters of an episode. And watch her just repeatedly shooting him in the head and him just getting back up and saying, can we continue this conversation, please? And she shoots him again.
So how much of that conversation would be Jack flirting?
All of it. Every bit of it. Even getting shot in the head.
The more
would be
often he gets shot. Yeah. That's an aphrodisiac to Jack.
I don't know. There's.
I was going to continue to run with that. I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yeah,
it
says, probably best.
Says everything he needs to. GSW means SEX. I think because of the fact that there is, I look at their relationships with the Doctor and the fact that the Doctor's relationship with UNIT is rather touchy, because there is the history. There is the fact that they revere his input, and they have given him, especially at this point, he has pretty much been given carte blanche to do anything that he needs to within their organization, within their rank and file, using their resources, using their presence. But all the same, there's that level of his distrust for the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Which made his relationship, you know, you think about the way that he used to deal with the Brig and Benton and so forth, and it was something where he would rather deal with them on a personal communication level, that when it became things where it was military presence or that show of force, that wasn't his angle. So he'd say, if you're going to do that whole thing, if you're going to do that strong arm, I'm going to be over here. I'm going to be working with the tech. Because that's something that I'm comfortable with morally. On the Torchwood side, I don't see there are very few instances where I could see him being able to jump in and work alongside them, because they are almost always a shoot first kind of a, you know, the cloak and dagger stuff is always with a very, very violent tinge to it. They go in guns blazing regularly, and that's just not something the Doctor can condone.
Yeah, I definitely don't see the Doctor teaming up with them, so to speak, but maybe working towards mutual goals or something like that, where it's a almost a race to see who can, you know, like they're working together, but they're both trying to get there first so that they can resolve it to their standard kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like that could make for an interesting dynamic. But I don't know. I don't think that we'll ever actually see that, but it sounds interesting.
You know what could be a little tip of the hat, just a little thing to kind of tie it in, is if, especially with the class series, if they had a Reaver on the loose.
That would be kind of cool.
Because that's, I mean, that was the iconic.
Yeah, that was the
issue.
The Torchwood
through the whole first season of Torchwood. I mean, that was their that was their Slithy.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it's there's absolutely. I never call any door in the Hooniverse closed.
Oh yeah,
ever,
no.
Ever. But this is one that if they reopened it, I mean, other than just, you know, there'd be, if it wasn't Jax Hub, if it was any other representation of Torchwood, yes, there would be a fan backlash for a little while to a certain degree. But I think by the same token, there'd be people who are like, yeah, okay, sure, tie these threads together.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, okay, if we bring back Jax Hub, it's like, okay, so you get Jack and you get Gwen. And
no, but you won't get Gwen.
Well, yeah, true.
Because, yeah, Eve Miles has already said she's retiring the character.
Well, and so, and I mean, that's what I'm saying about Inside Baseball is the fact that, I mean, John Barrowman is tied up with the Arrow TV show for at least another 2 years. You know, longer if he can stretch it, because he's loving the hell out of that. But, I mean, aside from getting the actors back, like, I mean, there's not really much more story to tell with Jax Hub. Like, they've kind of run the course with that one.
No. And I think that's a good chapter to leave closed.
Yeah.
I mean, the UK series or the US series being what it was, yes, it was kind of a strange experiment. But it was kind of, it was like the X-Files reunion. It was nice to kind of see them all again, or most of them again, for one last go around. But no, I would say at this point it'd have to be something where Torchwood is being used in another capacity. But if it's done right, they'll forgive you really fast.
True, true. Yeah, and that's the thing, is we would need someone who understands the, you know, what Torchwood is supposed to be or how it could be effectively used, that kind of thing. Which, incidentally, I think that Chris Chibnall might be able to pull off if he decided to go that way.
Yeah, especially knowing, you know, his CV. I mean, this is all his strong suit, and especially something that's, you know, you take all of his Grace Point Broadchurch work, and that's all directly applicable to a Torchwood-esque story arcs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you want to start getting some of the really kind of gritty, ripped from the headlines, but with a paranormal or extraterrestrial tinge to it, and you want to work that back into the standard DW series, okay, yeah, do that. And every once in a while, just test the waters a bit, do a couple of name drops regarding Torchwood or Torchwood-related infrastructure, see how the public reacts to it, and see if they're ready to be able to handle some mention of a surviving fifth hub or something of that sort.
Yeah, and that could be all it is just take a normal story where you have some, you know, small team or something working alongside the Doctor, and then at the very end, when everything's resolved, you know, as they're going off, they're just like, oh yeah, no, we're with Torchwood, and then they're gone, and the Doctor's like, wait a minute, and you never have to pick it up if you don't want to, but that'll give you an indication of how is the audience going to react to this. Okay, they did good, then we can bring more Torchwood back. If not, then hey, you know what? Done. You never have to hear about it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
So.
Or you could see the creation of a new team. Like, it's not a surviving team. It's something they created after Torchwood was disbanded or run off or whatever they were.
Mm.
How amazing.
Effectively dissolved.
How amazing would it be if we had, like, a disgruntled companion reform Torchwood?
Donna Noble.
The Osgoods.
Not knowing. And she goes back to the whole idea of defending against the Doctor because she doesn't remember anything. So she's strictly the anti-spaceman league.
Oh, God. As much fun as that would be, I don't know if I could handle Donna opposite anyone but Tennant, though.
That's true.
I would love to find out if we could, though.
I'm not opposed to at least testing the waters, but yeah.
You don't want to see Donna opposite Capaldi's eyebrows?
Oh, come on. Just picture Donna Noble going up against Malcolm Tucker.
God.
Hey, she would bring out the Malcolm Tucker.
Oh, she absolutely would. That would be the first indication of the doctor dropping the F-bomb.
Oh. Like punctuation marks.
Oh, jeez. That would be fun, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's I love the way that they have brought Unit back. I love how Unit is being used most of the time. The Wizard's Apprentice or the Magician's Apprentice notwithstanding. But most of the time...
Yeah, but when you get to the Truth of Consequences involvement and that sort of thing, or I still don't understand why they have to operate out of little dark caves under buildings and things. Dungeon they used to have buildings. Really nice shiny offices.
It looks better on screen. That's why.
Is that it? Yeah.
No, but I do like the way that they brought him back, and I hope that we continue to see them. I hope that it is a resurgence, that it's not just a temporary thing. But I also wouldn't mind seeing a couple with Torchwood thrown in just for just to juxtapose it.
Mm, yeah, like I said, I think if it were a very slow, methodical reintroduction, so it's not just suddenly, hey guys. Just realize, because honestly, and I'm really sorry to make this parallel, but I'm not really sorry. When I think about all the Torchwood hubs and things, my mind goes to the Warehouse 13 hubs. Okay. And when the show was starting to run out of some ideas, they said, well, why don't we just say that there was another warehouse somewhere, and that'll give us an opportunity to have an adventure someplace. And they would run off and, whatever. So... I don't want it to be one of those quick, script gags
just to give you
something to do. Yeah. Leave me some breadcrumbs, break the ice with the audience, and monitor the way they react to it, because you know they're going to pay attention. You throw some little reference in to saying, well, since the Cardiff incident, we haven't had to, so forth, and see what people do, if they pick up on it, how they react, if they're getting angry about, don't you dare. If it's not John Barrowman, I want nothing. Yeah, and if that's the way they behave, then I didn't mean anything. I was just giving a little nod to RTD. That's all. Moving on.
Well,
Yanto or bust.
I think he's not eligible to be on the team anymore.
They can bring anybody back. Just put him in the Lazarus pit.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, Yanto with bloodlust. That would be amazing.
How do you take your coffee? Deadly.
I don't know. This was kind of fun exploring this, though, and seeing the difference. Because, honestly, it's one of those topics you never really consider until you start to dig into it and see all of the differences and similarities. But before, mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, hey, there's these two organizations do basically the same thing. Just, whatever.
Torchwood, if you were to take Unit, take away all the red tape, and boil it down to one representative team member for each of the departments, you've got Torchwood.
Yeah.
In essence, you've got your scientists, you've got your medical advisor, you've got your operations, you've got your enforcement arm, and then you've got...
Secretarial.
Well, no, I'm trying to think. I mean, at any point, well, and then they had their connection with the police force. You had Gwen's mate in the Welsh police, who was just kind of the yutz liaison. Poor guy. But yeah.
All right, we ready to jump into the news?
Well, do we want to just let people know what we're going to be? Diving into next week? Because I've got an idea.
What are we talking about next week?
Games!
Characters?
Yay!
Yeah. I thought we were having some fun when we were doing the identify the doctor from the quotes kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it's got to be a little more interesting if you can come up with some representative quotes from the companions that help you identify who it is that you're communicating with based on the amount of angst in their voice. Or mm-hmm. romantic fluffery, or outright unbridled Donna Noble rage, or whatever it is that you're dealing with at the time.
The boy is what gives it away.
Boy. No, we had some classic companions who would drop an oi from time to time.
Okay.
But yeah, and don't worry, Haley, we'll keep the classic companions to a relative minimum.
Unless I start winning.
That's true.
That's the ace in the hole.
But I figured we'd play quotable companions and see what we know about. I mean, we'll go through the moderns, obviously, because it'd be great to know, you know, how many. There are some definite gray areas in terms of even some of the longer quotes that you could pull from some of the last three or four companions where you'd think, God, that could have been any single one of them. I'm not talking just a line where one of them says, you know, Doctor, they're coming right for us. who could that be? But something that has a little bit of context to it that even then, be an interesting job to identify them. So, plus, hey, games.
Yay.
All right. Let's get into the news.
Well, we mentioned the last time around that when they did the BAFTA nominations that Michelle Gomez got her nomination, and we were all very collectively surprised that Mr. Capaldi did not get his. But we nonetheless congratulated Ms. Gomez on her nod, and we'll see how she fares. But apparently she decided to share with us how she reacted when she heard visually.
Oh, God.
And it suits her. Jay's opening this image for the first time, and...
Yep. Oh my. There it is.
That's
lovely.
Mm-hmm. She's very flexible.
Yeah, I don't think I can do that.
So we're not going to discuss this news item any farther and just leave the link there for all of you to discover on your own.
Yeah, please do.
Ingrid Oliver's reply is what really
makes it.
But on to another item that I'm so pleased when I heard the news about this. And that had to do with our personal favorite, you know, our champion of awesomosity, Rachel Talalay. A little earlier in this past week as we record, there was the announcement from Mark Gatiss that they were going to be starting into all of their writing and principal productions for Sherlock Season 4. Okay, I realize this is a Doctor Who podcast, but obviously the interconnection between the two
can't
production teams is intense. So we come to find out that the first episode of what will be Season 4 is going to be directed by the esteemed Rachel Talalay, which means that technically she has completed the Super Hulock trifecta.
Yay!
Yep, having directed Supernatural in Season 2, obviously Doctor Who, and now Sherlock.
There absolutely needs to be, like, an award for that or something. Like,
yeah, that's called fan adoration for the rest of time.
No, like, I mean, like a physical trophy.
She gets all the tumblers.
Like an Impala hauling a TARDIS with, you know, a Sherlock cap on it or something. Like, somebody needs to make this happen.
She'll get Sam and Dean standing out on her front lawn holding a boombox over their heads, playing the Doctor Who theme, while Watson stands off in the wings with his head just buried in his hands.
That would work. That would absolutely work.
I just want a conversation between Castiel and Watson. Anyway, okay. Last news item. I threw this on here just because this amused me to no end. Obviously, you know, I read a number of the Titan comic series, mm-hmm. and they've been going on with some great stuff for 9th, 10th, and 12th Doctor right now. And there's new editions out there for both 10th and 12th this past week that you can go get a hold of. I highly suggest. It's great that we were talking about Unit this week. Because did I share? I don't know if I shared.
Yes,
I think I shared this image with you guys. There's one frame from the 12th Doctor's issue where he gets a call on his cell. You know, we know the Doctor appears, you know, occasionally carries a mobile. And you know how you can set contact photos for who's calling. So
he's got a picture.
He's getting called by Kate Stewart, but he's modified because he can never remember who the hell she is. So he alters her photo to put the Briggs mustache on her. And someone's looking over his shoulder and says, you know, if she ever sees what you've done to that photo, she will shoot you.
brilliant.
It amused me to no end.
I saw that, and it reminded me of Battlestar Galactica, the episode where Starbuck gave Admiral Adama the birthday card, and it said something about her being the father, whatever. Do you see the family resemblance? And she'd drawn a mustache on her picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It made me think of that.
Yeah.
And
blondes with mustaches. There you go.
There you go.
But, I mean,
big bushy black
mustaches. You're not, if you're not reading the Titan comics, you're really doing yourself a disservice, because these things are fantastic. They really are like an episode of the show on paper. They do a fantastic job of catching the feel of the show and the pacing of each Doctor, too. I mean, the 10th Doctor comics feel very different from the 12th Doctor or the 11th Doctors. You can tell whose Doctor it is just by the feel of the book.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the reasons why I've really loved the 9th Doctor series they've been doing, because if it's one of the only ways that you can really get something that is in that Eccleston vein, and they've captured him beautifully, especially where he was towards the end of the series, where similarly with Capaldi, the rough corners started to round off a little bit, and he would be more involved with it, but you could tell everything that he was carrying, the weight on his shoulders, and they were able to convey that beautifully in panel format. But you can't help but read it in his northern accent,
exactly,
because they've got his mannerisms and his manners of speech. It's great.
So yeah, if you're looking for something new to read, definitely check these comics out, because they're just absolutely brilliant, every last one of them. All right, well, that's about all that we've got for this week. So this has been episode 182 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, so when do we start including, like, Starfleet and things like that in this whole, like, alien thing?
That'll be on the off weeks. We'll discuss that. And this is Kier saying, 5 rounds as soon as I get this pizza delivery that's apparently at the door.
And this is Haley saying, Avengers, assemble!
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2016.
Noise.
Kier, make the noise. I don't have my iPad.
Got reverb on that one.
It gets worse every goddamn time.
If by worse you mean better.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
Can't wait till we do our next live cast.
Jeez.
So, you folks don't realize how much we leave on the editing floor, do you?
All this gold. We don't
wasted.
Share it.
No chicken stories this week.
What?
Aww.
No, it's pretty quiet on the chicken front, except for the fact that I have named all the new chicks.
Okay.
They're all Clara, right?
Yep, they're all Clara. Nice. I'm not going to tell them apart. They're all brown. So it's Clara. And I'm picking one up each day going, hi, Clara. It's good to see you. And I put that one down and I grab the next one. Clara, you good little one. Aren't
you,
boy?
You really are.
They have no idea what the hell
you really
going
are
on.
Capaldi Shocker at this point. You know that, right?
That's exactly what it is.
You look all brown to me.
Probably not this week, but maybe next week, I'm going to start into my Time Lord cosplay. I'm going to start doing, building the collars out of EVA foam. Mm-hmm. It was like what do they call it? The stress tiles, whatever they put down the floor is the padded foam things that you can buy. Right, yeah. That apparently you can heat mold it and do all this crazy stuff with. So
right, that's actually what I'm.
But
using.
We're not.
Yeah. What's up? That's actually what I'm using to make my N7 armor.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Are you doing? You following Bill Doran's foam smithing techniques? Because I'll get those books off to you. They're an immense help.
Okay. No, that's
Bill Doran. Chinbeard. Okay. Follow him up. Go on Twitter. Follow Chinbeard. So he's been a friend of ours for quite some time. A set from Tyrion's Landing and everything. You know, she introduced me to him. I had him on a couple of casts when we used to do the Nerdy Dirty. Mm-hmm. And we did one on cosplay and had him on. He's an immense resource. And he has gotten to the point where he's worked through all of the different, you know, he's worked with fiberglass and all these other things. And he finally landed on that. And he's like, it's faster. It's cheaper. If you screw something up, you throw it over your shoulder and grab another piece because it only costs you, you know, a buck and a quarter.
Right.
And on and on and on. But he's got, he calls himself a foam smith.
Okay.
Not to be confused with a poop smith.
Those aren't the same.
No, nope. Not quite.
And he's put out a couple of Bibles on building armor out of EVA, building weapons and props out of EVA, doing painting, even if you're not like much of a, like me, I can't airbrush to save my life. Because I don't have a steady enough hand, but that sort of thing. And that's, yeah, it's. I've been sort of toying around with it. It's crazy easy to work with a heat gun. So
nice.
Well, heat gun and barge cement.
Okay.
But he's got like a punch list for here's how to estimate what you're going to need for materials for the base of your project. Here's how you bear in mind, you know, if you have to bend at the elbows and the knees, make sure you're giving yourself this much space and blah, 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 blah. It's great tips as a result of like...
Definitely.
Oh, and he's got, in addition to his primary books, he's got ones that are like quick reference, like, all right, so you need to build cosplay in a hurry, huh? Here's where you make your compromises to get it done in time. It'll look great, but you're going to want to go back later and fix this.
Okay.
So... But yeah, so we're doing Time Lord robes, and we had to do the collars and everything. And I was looking at him like, I don't really want to do the traditional High Council stuff. You know, mm-hmm. I like the shape of it all, but the patterns just, you know, you've seen one, you've seen a half a dozen of them. So wanted to do something different. And we thought, okay, Time Lords, time travel, time. Okay, so we're doing a DeLorean. Andre tipped me off to this. Apparently, they did a version of Yahtzee that was a Back to the Future edition that comes with a practical flux capacitor.
Oh, God.
That's about 5x7. So we're going to mount that in the collar and put like the, you know, DeLorean Motor Company logos all over it and pipes and wiring and whatnot. So that's one of them. Okay. We're going to do another one that's Tron. So I've bought a bunch of EL wire and I'm going to light it all up and has the disc on the back. So that's super freaking cool. And we got to do one for Raimani, too. She's still deciding what pattern she wants for hers. But I think she was thinking Captain America so she could have a giant shield in her back.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. You should see the ideas we decided not to do because they seemed too complicated. I was going to do a Groot. I also thought about a series of Time Lord robes that if Gallifrey fell to one of their adversaries, what would a Cyberman... you know, collar robe thing come out looking like and whatnot. I was going to have a blast with it. I might do those for, if I get the pattern down right and I can crank them out relatively quickly. Cause I might end up having to do 7 of these things for Dragon Con this year. 3 for us and then family members and stuff that come along that want to be part of it for group photos and stuff. Then I have to crank out 3, 4, 5 more of these things. So, but each one's only going to cost me $8. And time.
Nice.
So.
Yeah. You'll definitely have to send pictures as you progress on these.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do... because at the same time I'm working on cosplay for Kanan Jarrus, I'll be doing a Rebels costume. And so that's a bit of armor. You know, he's got that one shoulder cap thing and a sleeve. But it's more like building his blaster and his saber. That'll take a little bit longer to do. And then some airbender stuff we're doing because we're basically bringing 5 sets of cosplay down for that weekend.
Nice.
Because you have to do like 2 a day. You do one for the day that you can actually sit in panels on that don't have like giant antenna while you're sitting in a panel room. Could you put your head down?
Slouch.
Or the ones that it all lights up and you're glowing in the middle of a panel full of 12,000 people and John Barrowman's pointing at you. And then the nighttime, you may even do a cosplay change in the middle of the evening because you go work the floor in any of the major hotels that are stocked. So you've got 6,000 people in the lobby of each hotel.
Oh, wow.
In the lobby. And you work the floor, and it takes you 3 hours to walk from one side of the floor to the other. You get to the elevator, you go upstairs, change, come down in another costume, and do it all again. It's awesome. Awesome. Nothing beats Dragon Con. Nothing.
All right. Well, I think we need to go ahead and wrap it up.